WIOX is supported by Sap Bush Hollow Farm and Cafe on West Fulton Road in West Fulton, Schoharie County, New York, for online shopping and self-serve pickup. Grass-fed and pastured meats and eggs, frozen soups, stews and curries, flour, beans, dried fruits, nuts, coffee, milk and butter and yogurt and cheese. Sap Bush Hollow Farm and Cafe on West Fulton Road in West Fulton. SAPBUSH, sapbush.com. WIOX is supported by the Mountain Eagle, the community newspaper and website serving the Catskills region, covering Delaware, Schoharie, Greene, and northern Ulster counties, with local reporting, regional events, school sports, letters, and features, all in the Mountain Eagle.
Hi, I'm Mike.
And I'm Shelia, and we host Pop Up Wednesday mornings at 10. And Friday afternoons at 2.
Right here on WIOX Roxbury. We love sharing good music with you. And we hope that you love the music that we share.
We would like to invite you to join our holiday fundraising binge by making a tax-deductible contribution at WIOXradio.org.
And every dollar you give will be matched.
Remember, WIOX is supported by you.
Okay, this you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. You know, hunting season has come to an end.
It did. Yesterday.
Yesterday. That's right. It was.
Did you have a successful season?
Yes. Yeah, all said and done.
Good.
It was a slower season, I think, for me.
I agree.
How about you, John?
Good. I got my buck yesterday on the last day. It was crazy for me. I don't know. Usually I have an easier time than I had this year, but I don't know. I've passed up quite a few before thinking I'd find a bigger one, and I didn't, but that's also fine.
Yep. I went for a buck back in bow season, and it worked out. Can't complain. That was just a lucky day. I was near a food source of large, old growth red oaks, and they were raining acorns that were raining deer. So, pretty neat. Pretty cool to see.
That's awesome.
Other than that, though, I mean, I did try. Can't say lack of effort. I got a doe, but, you know, geez. For the amount of time I put in this year, as far as sitting in places that I've traditionally gone to, didn't see much. And that means I got to change my tactics.
I think I put in more time than I possibly ever have in all seasons. And I had a slower year with an average result. So
Yeah.
I guess it was a poor year for me.
I had some opportunities, you know. There was a couple of big ones that escaped, and that, but that's why they call it, as my friend says, hunting.
Oh, is that why they?
Yeah, and not shopping. So, you know, they are crafty animals. And despite what people may think with the increase in hunting technology, they have the advantage on us.
Yeah, they have the hundreds of thousands of years of evolution in that nose that gets away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, rifling is a great technology. But, you know, rifle season, once that begins, the deer go into cover. And since you can only hunt deer during daylight hours, and people might be saying, well, when can you hunt at night? Predator hunting. Coyote, fox.
Yep.
You can hunt at night. But, yeah, so if they go in the cover of darkness or they go into literal vegetation cover, that's a hard animal to pursue. Try walking through crunchy leaves or mountain laurel where deer are, and you will soon be busted. They will see you. They will hear you. They
Absolutely.
Will smell you.
And you know, I hear every year from somebody, well, you just come hunt my backyard. I see them every day. Well, I mean, if you follow all the rules, you know, the reason, some of the reasons you see them in your backyard, you got a bird feeder out there or whatever, but as soon as you walk in the woods, the deer know it's different. It's not your backyard. It's their backyard. It's tough.
And even a lot of those backyards, if people pay attention, and many of them do, the deer disappear in gun season.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard someone say that? You know, they're around, but then during gun season, they know. I don't think they know the dates. They don't have a calendar, but they smell and they see and they're scared and they go into cover and then they leave your dwelling.
Yep, and us hunters have probably tried to pattern them in outside of gun season and don't know where they went.
That's right.
But whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the hunting season goes on, getting back into making burger and mixing it with beef suet. So that'll hopefully go a long way. And got some fat off these deer, rendered the tallow last week. And now it's a crystal white, and now it's ready to mix with some lye and make into soap. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Using it all from the forest.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make some balsam fir essence. I really like that smell. I'm going to experiment with that and see if I can add it to the soap, you know, try to make some. So, I was, you know, you need some dry needles. And I was like, where the hell am I going to find a balsam fir? I got to go up the Peekamoose. I got to go here. I got to go there. And I'm literally laying on the floor, and all of a sudden, I look up, and I see a Christmas tree that's drying out unsafely near my wood stove. So there you go. That's that.
Is it a balsam or a Fraser?
You know, I'm not sure, to be honest with you, because I think it's a balsam, but there's mixes, too, at the Christmas tree farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know, but it's a fir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
They have, what do you call, cultivated types that actual mix, you know, mix the two.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is, but that'll work. But I'm also going to go see if I can harvest tomorrow with the kids some juniper berries, which is the eastern red cedar, which is not a true cedar, just to confuse the hell out of everyone. It's actually a juniper. And take the blueberries, which are miniature cones that resemble berries, and crush them up. And I've always heard this, and I've never tried. It's one of those things I just haven't done. Use it as a rub when I'm frying up some steaks, John.
Oh, yeah?
Hell yeah.
And what flavor does that have?
Juniper.
Whoa.
John?
Okay.
I don't know. I mean,
You'll
what
try.
Is black pepper taste? You know, yeah, I don't know. It's spicy. Have you ever eaten one?
I haven't, no.
Yeah. I mean, the western cedars are supposed to be better, but the eastern red cedar is still good. It's used in gin, the flavor gin. That's what gives gin its taste.
Okay. Well, I know I've tasted gin.
So there you go. I hate gin. I'm a Jack Daniel kind of guy. You know, sour mash. It's my thing.
I like it.
Hopefully Santa Claus brings me some.
Hint, hint, Santa Claus.
I already brought me some, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah, you too.
Me too.
Son of a gun. But, So, yeah, I'm going to try it. I'll give it a try. You know,
right.
Something to do, you know.
How far do you have to walk for that?
No, I'm going to go to Gardner, see if I can get some there. That's like the town tree over there because, you know, it's recently abandoned farmland and red cedar does that, grows up there. Around here, you know, this is kind of a dry area for eastern red cedar. In Roxbury, East Branch, Delaware area. You got to go to the Schoharie. You got to leave the area of the Esopus to find them.
Yeah, Greene County has quite a lot of it throughout.
Isn't that weird?
Schoharie County, yeah.
You don't find it here too much, but you go in any direction, you will.
But then you come here, and there's apple trees everywhere, so I wonder...
There's apple trees everywhere here. This area is blessed for wild apple trees. There's no doubt about that. I almost think it's just because of the humidity, maybe. You know, it's too humid where I grew up in the Hudson Valley, and maybe diseases and stuff are more rampant for wild apples. I don't know, because I grew up around apple orchards, and you very rarely saw wild apples. I don't know.
Maybe that's because of the cedar, though. Cedar apple rust?
Oh, good point.
That's what I was getting at.
Oh, I'm slow. I wasn't picking up on that. Yeah, that could be.
I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't kill them, though. It just retards their growth.
But it must affect them, right? I mean,
definitely.
Maybe reproductive status? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of that. I don't know. Well, what's tonight's topic?
We're going to talk about wood, like we've never done before.
We've talked about firewood, but we haven't talked about both firewood and firewood heating appliances. So,
right.
Yeah, we have talked about how to select trees for firewood more recently. I don't think we've done this show in a couple of years now, to be honest with you.
We're going to get a little more in-depth on comparing costs with oil and why to heat with wood or not.
Yeah.
Your call. And talk about which tree species work for us, what season's the best, why to season, all this stuff.
Yeah, wood's kind of like, isn't it simple? You just burn it. But, you know, it's not so simple, I don't think.
Yeah, it can be complicated. It's like making maple syrup, right?
Yeah, exactly. You just boil away the sap. You can say that about anything.
Right.
Right? Oh, well, you just do this. Well, you just do that, you know?
Right.
But it's never that way. When I did this show, I think it was somewhere between 2008 and 2010, and I had to totally adjust the per-gallon rates of fuel oil. It was over $3.
Wow.
Back then.
For
fuel oil.
Oh, I didn't think of 2008 was when it was really skyrocketing.
Yeah, it was a big savings. The savings now is not as much. It's like $2.34 right now a gallon for fuel oil.
It must have just gone up because I bought a tank of fuel within the last 2 to 3 weeks, and I paid $2.04.
Well, this is an average.
Oh.
So it could be in the Catskills.
Gotcha.
This is an average statewide. So that factors in Long Island, Western New York, and here.
Gotcha.
So we're not going to – we'll get a little bit into why. Why burn wood? I mean, you know, there's heating costs. Although, to be honest and perfectly fair, fuel oil is kind of cheap right now. There's the self-sufficiency thing, which is, you know, it's gaining steam. I think this is important. As long as your back is healthy and you're a healthy person, foregone gym fees. You can't replicate moving wood, splitting wood. You can't replicate that in the gym. As we would call it when I was growing up in high school, I used to wrestle and stuff. Muscle confusion, man. You can run in a linear fashion on a treadmill or on the road, but nothing replicates hiking or, you know, lifting bluestone with a wheelbarrow or moving firewood because it's muscle confusion. It's not linear. You're moving all around, you know?
I tell you, I feel it right now. I hike a lot in deer season, all over the place, and I'm in pretty good shape right now. During this time of year, I'm the best shape I am all year, I think.
Yeah.
And I put on some miles in the snow the last few days, and muscle confusion hits me. My calves are toast right now.
Yeah. Calves
are
in snow.
Gosh.
Yeah, I bet. I bet, man. I was sore as hell. I shoveled my driveway after that snowstorm.
Yeah. I was thinking about you.
That was a one shovel snowstorm where you had to literally do a shovel by shovel. I got a new fancy shovel, though, man. Pretty neat. I recommend it, but that's another show.
On shovels?
Yeah, we'll just do just a show just on snow shovels. No, we're not going to do that. No one wants that. But we'll see if they want this. I don't know. But, yeah, the exercise is definitely good.
For some people, I've seen them go crazy. The whole firewood shuffle thing. They have a place where they cut it, place they move it to, place they store it, and then they'll move it again, and maybe into the woodshed that's off of a different property. Maybe they cut it on a different property is what I'm saying. Stack it there, bring it to their woodshed that's 100 feet from the house, and then they got to move it again to the house.
I know.
Yeah, so it can be quite an ordeal if you want it to be.
I'm not like this, but some people just don't like the sight of a firewood pile near their house. They'll put it 100, 300, 400 yards. I'm thinking of one guy in Napanock when I go for a walk. He stacks it like 400 yards from his house.
That's crazy.
And then there's people in Margaretville, I'm not going to say where, but they have the nicest, neat wood pile, and it's at least 150 yards from the house. And they plow out to it, and I'm like, God bless them. But why not? I think it looks nice.
As if it's stacked neatly and nice, yeah.
Hell yeah.
A big firewood mound is kind of, you're right, kind of ugly, but.
I don't know.
I stack it right against my garage. You know why? I got a tin-sided garage, and it just radiates heat all summer long. So I think it helps help bake it out and dry it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see why it wouldn't. Yep, so there's other reasons. We're not going to go into these, but forest stand improvement. It's kind of like you can kill two birds with one stone. You can improve the quality of your forest if you know which tree to cut, the right tree, and which one to leave. So firewood can be great for that, but that's another show. So price of fuel. This is information taken from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, USEIA. If you ever get bored, John, you know, you can look up every state and see how they're doing. Guess who consumes more fuel oil than any other state in the union?
Well, since we're sitting in New York, I'm going to guess here.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. So New York State consumes more than any other state fuel oil. Per capita, it's one of the least amount. That means per person. But that makes sense because, you know, we have New York City where people are very densely living. On the flip side of that, though, that they don't say, well, they do say, but you have to read more into it. Most people in New York City, they live off of natural gas.
Well, so does the rest of the country. I mean, wouldn't that be why the fuel oil per capita is lower, you said?
Per capita, per person. So, you know, like per 100,000 people or something like that.
Right.
But total, yes, New York State consumes the most fuel oil, supposedly, according to the U.S. EIA data. Now, there's certain areas. Like when I went to West Virginia, went down there to go look around. Got bored during a pandemic, and everyone's on natural gas there. I mean, even the mountains and those hills, they don't see firewood. And I was like, okay, I know it's down south, it's a little warmer, but they have winter, you know?
Right.
The guy's like, we got natural gas. Middle of nowhere, they got gas.
Hmm.
So up here in the Catskills and the Berkshires, or you could be, doesn't matter, you could be in the Highlands, Hudson Highlands or something. Actually, we're in these in-between areas where your only options are fuel oil because there's no natural gas pipelines or wood. So there you go. You go to Western New York, they got gas again.
Yeah, oh, all over the place.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. Wood or fuel oil is going to be your choices unless you want to use expensive electricity or propane, which is bottled gas. Could do that. So the average per gallon for fuel oil, which is what we're really going to talk about, is $2.34 a gallon. And let's see. The average total gallons that a person uses is 718 gallons of fuel oil. The average total cost per house is $1,680. That's every year. So you know what? It's not a tremendous amount of money to heat your home. But every year, you know, hey, it adds up to a car over 10 years, maybe.
Maybe that's almost close to what your property taxes are or your school taxes, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. For a lot of people, that's a tax, that's a property tax bill.
Yep.
That's either their property or their school or whatever, you know. So wood in the Catskills is about $180, $250 a cord. I'm not sure exactly what it is now, but I hear two-ish.
Two-ish a lot, I think.
Yeah.
$210 delivered.
Yep, so, yeah, and it's in the Catskills, same, $16.80 is what people are spending on fuel oil. So, average total cost for wood in the Catskills, I don't know, is this $11.70? Yeah, $11.70. So if you're buying your wood, it's not as much of a cost savings as it used to be.
Yeah, it's only $500 different.
When I adjusted these numbers for fuel oil, and wood has remained the same. That's why the gap's closed, because wood, throughout time, has not gone up and down that much.
I'm surprised it's not higher. If you go out, yeah, I hope a lot of people have split wood in the past, but you know how difficult it can be and to cut and split and then go deliver a cord of wood. I was doing it a lot, I don't know, 5 years ago. I was delivering a lot of wood. But I can do cut, split, and on the truck in 3 hours, and then I had to deliver it after that. So round trip, it would be a 4 to 5 hour ordeal to cut and split a cord of wood and deliver it for $200.
Damn. Yeah. That's tough.
That's not much money for
Yeah, it's hard on equipment, man. Hard on equipment, too.
Right.
You know? There's hidden costs in firewood. Not just the price, but your labor. There's time. It's not flicking a switch. It's not turning a dial. There's nothing automatic about firewood. Nothing.
You might have to train other people in the house other than yourself to use it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That can be difficult.
Yeah. There's definitely a learning curve. And as one older gentleman said to me one day, firewood is a way of life. It's not something you just consume.
Right.
You know, it's not a dense energy source. See, that's the main advantage. One of the advantages of fossil fuels, there's cost of fossil fuels, but people don't talk about the benefits. It's dense energy that can be moved very easily, and wood is not. You get beyond 25 miles, and wood becomes just too difficult to move. 25, 50 miles. No way. I mean, not many people are moving firewood 50 miles.
Yeah, no way.
It's not happening. Or at least not often. So, if you're doing your own firewood, there's a danger in felling trees, of course. And it's the most dangerous job on land. I think we've talked about this in the past. Per capita, most dangerous. 5 times more dangerous than COVID. So, I know COVID fresh in everyone's mind right now. Felling trees is 5 times more dangerous.
Okay.
So just so you know.
How much more dangerous is felling trees with a mask on?
John, don't get me started. So hidden benefits. I'm going to move along. Hidden benefits. I think there's a lot of hidden benefits. There's the, you know, we can talk about the ecological benefits. If you know what you're doing and you know what tree to cut, I've seen people's woodlots where they've been cutting firewood for decades. There's one guy that comes to mind. He's over in Cragsmore. And the red oak that he's been thinning around for decades, they look awesome. They do. It's just a small area, you know, a few acres. But they're great. They really, I mean, the trees respond to that added sunlight. The suppressed trees have been taken out. They're not just in tree purgatory or sunlight purgatory, as I might call it, where that tree is never going to beat out that other tree, but it's just competing with sunlight for it for decades. And it really does help.
Absolutely. So I've seen the same. Some of the best-looking timber out there is in a firewood lot. No one did it deliberately. They just were always cutting out the trees that didn't pass the beauty contest.
Yeah, and a lot of times, we've talked about this before, the smaller trees are not necessarily younger than the bigger ones. Look at their heights. If they're the same height, they're the same age. So what that means is firewood, you're actually incentivized to take out the smaller trees because they're less to handle. So those trees that are 6 inches to fit 14 inches, those are the trees you're going to target because they're easier to split.
Yep.
You start getting into bigger trees, they're just harder to split. So actually, you're incentivized to keep actually the faster-growing, healthier trees and take out the runtier, suppressed trees. And without even thinking too much about it, you're doing awesome management. So whereas timber management, you know, lack of markets, you're actually incentivized to take out the faster-growing, but that's blah, blah, blah. We're not going to go into that.
A whole other show. We've done several on that show.
Yeah, that's right. So we're not going to get into crop tree management because that's just getting into what we just talked about. So up next, we'll talk about getting your own firewood. And which trees make good firewood? They're not created equal. They are all different. And since it's Christmas, we'll do some songs about the Prince of Peace. Prince of Peace. It's George Harrison.
All right.
My sweet lord. You know. Christmas, man. It's Christmas Eve today.
This is right about when I start listening to Christmas music.
Yeah. That's too bad, John. I haven't listened to it since shortly after Halloween, so.
Jeez, I couldn't do it.
At 92.9 and 94.3 down the Hudson Valley. Slamming the Christmas music.
When you just avoid Christmas until deer season's over, it just keeps Christmas so fresh every year.
I'm tired of George Michael, his Christmas song. It's not even really a Christmas song. It's about Christmas. It's just something that happened to him during Christmas. Tired, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Doesn't matter. I don't know. There's some Christmas songs that really annoy me.
There are some bad ones.
Yeah. I don't like John Lennon's Christmas song about the, you know, the war and making you feel bad about even celebrating Christmas.
Right.
Like, it's too bad because it sounds great. I love that song.
It's a good tune, right?
But I listened to the words one day years ago, and I was like, this song is snarky. I don't like this song.
I can't do this anymore.
I can't do this anymore. I know a lot of people probably disagree with that, but I don't know. I listened to the words one day. I was like, I don't know. I just can't we just enjoy the Christmas for a little while? Anyway, this is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is firewood and firewood heating appliances. And we are talking about getting your own firewood. Firewood, if you're buying it, is going to be measured in a cord. And a cord is nothing more, no matter how you stack it, 128 cubic feet. For example. 4 foot high by 4 feet deep by 8 feet long. If you multiply all those, you get a cubic measurement. It would be 128.
Okay.
But
if you had one row.
The chances are you stack, you know, like I used to stack like 5 to 6 feet high. I still do, really, about 5 feet. So that's going to throw up your measurement. But it doesn't matter. As long as it's, you know, adds up to 128, you can kind of figure out how many cords you have.
Yep. So a lot of people cut longer wood, like 17, 18 inches long.
Yeah. And what do you cut?
I have to do 15. My stove just can't take it. Yeah. It'll fit 16s, 17s, maybe. But the problem is it's got a taper onto the bottom of it. So sometimes you get a piece hung up and it doesn't fall down on top of the coals and just won't burn.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a flat bottom to it.
Okay.
So rather annoying.
What
are you going to do? Yeah. The stove was there when I bought the house. So.
Yeah.
I'm using it.
Well, it was there, right? And it's kind of like that with wood sometimes. What's there, right? So species-wise, there are definitely species that we all prefer to burn. But these days, what we end up burning is the white ash tree.
Right. So I've been renting for the last few years. And I guess the last 4 years I've been renting. Two of the 4 years I had a wood stove, and I heated the house primarily with wood. And as a renter, I think we've talked about on the show before, you got to go with species that just season fast.
Mm-hmm.
They might not be the species that you get the most heat value out of, but something that is going to last you a year and be gone in a year in case you have to move.
Yeah, sure. Renter's wood.
Renter's wood, Ryan calls it. That's usually ash and red maple and great, great wood, but that's just what it is. So I was finally, then I bought a house. I was super excited to burn something nice, you know, cut.
Real nice.
Maybe sugar maple, red oak, hickory, yeah. If I can find something. Probably not anywhere near my house, but I was excited to burn something with a higher BTU value, and I just can't do it. Yeah. I keep falling into the same old species because it's convenient or easy or delivered to my house. I've had someone dropping off wood a lot lately.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, man. I get some of my wood from doing tree jobs, and white ash. A lot of times.
Yep.
White ash is okay. You know, there's this old saying about the king warming himself near white ash or something like that. There's an old poem. I don't think it's that great. It's okay. It's medium. It's medium.
Right. It's put up on a pedestal that it doesn't deserve. I'll tell you that.
It doesn't deserve it. We're going to lower it a peg right now.
Dude, the splitting white ash is not what everyone cracks it up to be. Holy cow.
Hell no. Any kind of knot, and that thing does not want it. It splits at first. It fools you. It's right. Going to split, and then at the end, it doesn't.
Sticks together, and not even a knot. If it got any twist in those grains, forget it. You're not doing it.
Now we're snobs in the Northeast. I mean, you got to be snobby about something, right?
Sure. Yeah,
fly fishermen are snobby about their casting techniques. Okay. And you know, archery people are, you know, snobby when it comes to gun hunters. And what else, John?
Especially if we're New Yorkers, we got to be snobby about something.
We got to be snobby. We're all snobby,
some
right?
What are firewood about people something. Snobby about?
We're firewood snobs. We look down upon people who burn with conifers.
Yeah, there's some parts of the world that's all they
that's
have.
That's when I put my hand up and go, oh, no, 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 we don't do that. But it's all backwards. It's almost like God was like, we're going to mess with these people. We're going to make the areas that are really cold only have
the worst
conifers. And give these places that are like, they get winter, and we're going to give them everything. And that's us. Yeah. We got everything in the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. I mean, we get winter, but we don't get winter like northern Alaska.
We don't even get winter like northern Adirondacks.
Yeah, exactly. And they only have like spruce and fir. Yeah. It's poor people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got to burn like 30 cords to heat a 1,000-square-foot house. I don't know. No, but a lot. You know, they got to burn like probably 10 to 18 cords to keep something, or have the most well-insulated place on the planet. You know?
Yeah. In the break, we were just talking about white birch and how much you regret burning it one year. And I remember I took a trip to Canada, almost 10 years ago now, but there are all their firewood stacks in Quebec were white birch.
Oh.
That's what they had.
Oh. So if you don't know, yeah, white birch is not dense. It's very light. It's what we would use. Well, we wouldn't use it for firewood. I would use it for sapwood, where you want a hot, fast fire to boil maple sap. But we wouldn't stoop so low as to put it in our wood stove.
It's just not worth the effort when they have these other species available.
Right, because remember what I was saying before about fossil fuels being dense energy? Well, when it comes to firewood, firewood's not as dense. But within firewood, there are some trees that are way more dense. So we have hardwoods, you know, like red oak. 2 years of seasoning, and you got something special. Shagbark hickory, which is the most dense, well, that and black locust and apple, that's 2 years seasoning, and you got something really special. But other trees like red maple, white ash, only 1 year. Black cherry is a really good wood. If I had to say the best all-around wood, it only takes a year to season, and it's just as dense as sugar maple and red oak, it would be American beech.
Yeah, I haven't burned American beech in a long time.
Yeah.
It's been burned that a lot in college.
If I have to cut down a red oak, which I don't like to do, I think red oak's my favorite because it always splits nice.
Yeah.
It cuts nice when you fell the tree and you're making your notch. It just cuts like butter. And when you split it, it always splits.
Just pops right apart?
It's just, it wants to get in the fire. It practically walks to the wood stove, John. No, not really. But it's nice. I like it a lot.
I feel very similar about red maple. It's not nearly as dense, but like you mentioned, it seasons in 1 year if you have to have something quick.
Yeah.
But it splits so easy. As long as we're talking firewood-sized trees here.
Right, not some wolf tree.
Yeah, forget it. If any wolf tree, forget that.
Yeah.
I know. I've talked to people who look at a tree and go, wow, there must be a cord and a half of wood in that one tree right there.
Yeah.
You can have it. Forget it.
Exactly. I used to do big trees, but now I can go faster with pole-sized trees.
Yep.
So some places, apparently it's a myth that conifers, you know, you can't burn them. They clog your chimney. As long as they're seasoned, you can burn them. You can burn conifers. But we don't. The only one that would be worthwhile burning here in the Northeast would be larch or hemlock, really.
They're the most dense of of the conifers.
Yeah, but when you compare it to, say, even red maple or white ash, yeah, you're going to go with red maple because it takes just as much energy, as you said, to lift a bundle of firewood, whether it be white ash or hemlock, to move it and handle it. So you might as well go with a denser wood.
Yep.
So, okay.
Well, one thing, I don't know if you find this, white ash makes my house dirty. Just something about the bark on white ash just holds everything, any type of debris.
Yeah,
I find myself sweeping I always sweep up in front of the wood stove, but like so much more debris comes off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's because the bark kind of gets loose and it gets this fine dust powder in between.
It's super fine stuff.
Shagbark hickory's kind of like that. Yeah. I think the best wood as far as the big hit, the heavy hitters would be black locust.
Black locust.
Stays nice and neat. It takes 2 years a season, but it splits nicely. Yeah, black locust.
I'll have to try it. I don't know where I would even find it around me. Old home sites seem to have it, right?
Yep, old absolutely. Farm yep. Apple is great, but one, we don't normally cut down apple, and two, you don't normally find large apple trees. So.
Right, and if they're worth cutting down at that point, it's usually very hollow or rotted.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just tuning in, listen to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is firewood and firewood heating appliances. So heat value does, just to illustrate how much it can be different between species, right? Well, so that a lot of people understand this, we'll have an equation of what certain tree species added together would mean in gallons of fuel oil, right? The heat value. So hickory, if we're burning hickory, ironwood, and apple, and oak wood, that might equate to about 127 gallons of fuel oil, all right?
Okay.
If you were burning a cord of beech, sugar maple, yellow birch, and white ash, that would be about 115 gallons of fuel oil. And if you were burning, these poor people, gray birch, paper birch, cherry, I don't know what kind of cherry they're talking about there, red maple, that would be 99 gallons of fuel oil. So the difference between burning gray birch and red maple and paper birch compared to hickory, ironwood, and apple is 28 gallons of fuel oil. So it adds up. It does add up.
Yep.
It means nothing, though, if you don't season your firewood. You can literally pay twice for your firewood, or in other words, get half the heating value if you're burning green wood. It's not seasoned.
So what do you do?
As people say that sell firewood, and I don't blame them, I cut the wood, I split it, I deliver it to you. The seasoning is on you. So don't expect your guy to, whoever you're buying it from, to have seasoned wood. If he's saying it's seasoned wood and it's not, that's a problem. But usually it's up to you to buy it ahead of time, get ahead of the game, and season it, or cut it yourself and do the seasoning yourself.
And be careful buying from somebody who tells you how long the logs sat and were cut. It's definitely he's misleading you, because the wood doesn't dry inside the log.
Right.
Wood dries from the end, and it needs to be split apart to really maximize the surface area to dry from. So it might be 30, 40, 50% moisture content, even though that log has been down the ground for 2 or 3 years.
Absolutely. Seasoned firewood can be measured with a moisture meter. 20% or lower is considered seasoned firewood. So if you have unseasoned firewood, like I said, you're going to burn more, or you're going to pay twice. You're going to have more creosote in your chimney, and that's not good. Of course, you're going to have more air pollution, particulates, smoke. So you're just going to have a tough time, man. You're going to have to do the kindling thing. I don't do the kindling thing. You know, I don't use any kindling, and the reason is because it's seasoned wood. All you need is newspaper. Literally, four to five pieces of paper rolled end to end, tied in a knot, put in the middle of three sticks, and voila. You got a fire. So you don't need to mess around with this kindling thing, and you know.
So how small do you cut firewood off the tree? Where do you quit cutting up the limb?
Where I feel like my wife could pick it up. Oh, you're talking about
diameter.
I was talking about how small to split it up in.
Oh, no, I'm not thinking split. I'm thinking when you're cutting rounds of wood, how small up that treetop do you go?
Oh, I would say 6 inches. Depends how desperate I am. If I'm doing a tree job and I have to move it further, maybe 6 inches, yeah. But if it's at my house, shoot, man, I may go up to 4 inches, maybe.
Yeah. Do you ever leave it round?
Yes. Yeah. Now, what I do is I'll split anything that'll stay straight on my chopping block.
Okay.
Anything. Even if it's small. Because if it stays round, it's not split, it just doesn't season as much.
Right. That's what I've found.
Absolutely.
I'm like you. It doesn't matter what the diameter is, but I have to split it. Even if it looks so small, I split it in half just to get it to season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it makes a big, even if you skin one side, it doesn't even have to be split, just to skin the bark on one side.
Yep,
it makes a big difference.
Exactly.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight we're talking about firewood and firewood heating appliances. We'll be right back. REM is a weird group with their own sound, and I like it. There. There's a lot of weird bands back then.
90s.
B-52s, man.
Is that her?
It sounds like her.
From the B-52s, sounds like her singing in the background, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure, but yeah, REM. How about that? So, we are talking about firewood and heating appliances on From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., Ryan and John. So let's get into it because we're running out of time. All right. So seasoning firewood. We talked about the importance of it. If you don't have seasoning wood, forget about the stove. I don't care how efficient the stove is. If you don't have seasoned wood, it's not going to be efficient at all. How to season wood? What do you think, John? How do you do it? How do you stack your wood?
How do I do it? Well, like I said, just getting into the two-year seasoning. I'm going to two-year season everything. It doesn't matter what it is. Now that I have a home of my own, I don't have to worry about renting and possibly moving.
Yeah.
So what I've done is I've got all of next year's rounds right now cut and in a pile. Most of them are stacked, but the pile fell over. So now it's just a pile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get to that after the winter's over and split them. I stack them, and I don't usually cover them right away just because I don't want to have to deal with the...
Oh, the rounds?
No, the split wood.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah. It's going to be the following year's wood. It's not going to be burned that fall. It's right. Not going to be burned in 6 months. So
yeah.
I don't even cover it. Even when it rains, only the wood on top is getting wet in a nicely neat stack.
Right.
I will cover it the year that it's going to be burned. Then it gets a full season covered.
Yeah.
Like that. And like it just mentioned, I like to stack it right up against my garage on the sunny side, and the heat just radiates off that tin. And you can, on a cool day, like a fall day, and 50, 60 degree and sunny, you put your hand on the wood pile and feel that it's 70, 80 degrees.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, if it's hitting that metal, it's warming it up.
So I think that really helps.
I stack my wood on pallets, so it's off the ground. Totally recommend it.
Yep.
Or you can do it on stringers or something, you know?
Yep, I got stringers.
Yeah, that's probably the most practical way, to be honest.
You can move them. I just cut poles is what I do. I cut
like
red maple or ash pole-sized wood, lay them down for stringers. And.
Yep, totally. That works. I like the pallets because I can stack more together, and if my pile is not perfect, it can fall into itself a little bit.
Okay,
you know? Makes sense. Here's the thing I've learned. I live in a really windy area. I cannot get away with a tarp. I can't get away with, metal roofing. I tried that. I have a lot of wind. I figured it out. There was someone on the stream that's been throwing out their garbage, and this is going to be, some people would never go for this. I mean, some people are stacking their firewood piles 300 yards from their house because they don't want to look at them, so they would never go for this one, about to say. This would definitely, they would look down on this.
Okay.
Just like we look down on people that burn conifers. Conifers, right? Anyway.
Hit me.
Yeah, they're dumping the garbage on the stream. So I look down in there, and one man's garbage is another man's treasure. This is, and it's green. What do you call it? Carpeting. They were throwing carpeting all down in there. I was like you know what? I'm going to use that carpeting to cover my wood pile. And it's green carpeting to boot. Man.
How does it work?
It's working great.
It sheds water.
Because the bottom of it's waterproof that goes on the floor.
Gotcha.
And I put the carpet side up like you would regularly. And once the rain hits it, it weighs it down even more. And when the snow hits it, even better. And here's the thing. If the wind does blow it, and it will sometimes, I don't have anything dangerous because the wind blows at my house and my wood pile's in front of my house. So when it was metal roofing,
it was going into your
coming
house.
To your car.
Oh no,
it was bad. So if this ever blows, it never blows away, but it's carpet. Okay, it's not gonna do anything.
So it just lays in your grass.
Great. So I recommend carpeting if you have a windy area because some people I see what they do. And it works for them because they live in an area where there's no wind. It's like they can just put anything on it, you know? That won't work for me. I've tied downs. I've used tie downs. I've used everything. It just rips anything. My neighbor put up, built a thing to stack his firewood in. It blew over.
It was one of those, shed barn things you get delivered on a truck. Yeah, I saw it.
It was on the ground.
It blew it right over.
And,
crazy.
And I totally believe it. Like, we had wind a couple nights ago. That would have blew it over if it was empty.
I'd say that that's unfortunate. I mean, I get away with a tarp.
Yeah.
But I stack between the garage and the house, so that even helps. On a windy day, it's more mild right there.
Yeah, that helps, man. So we only got a few minutes. We got to talk about heating elements a little bit here.
Okay.
Stoves. There's cast iron, there's plate steel, and there's soapstone. All right, soapstone, in order to have any kind of benefit from soapstone, it has to be huge. You have to have big thermal mass to heat up that huge amount of rock so it gives off heat over a long period of time. Cast iron is the traditional wood stove. I like plate steel because these new stoves are so efficient that if you mess up and you get distracted and your stove starts to overfire, plate steel, it can warp, but it's more less likely to. Cast iron can crack.
Yep.
I've done it. Stinks. So there's a radiant stove, like a Potbelly stove, but now they're circulating stoves, and they're very efficient. They got the baffles on the top, but they have a wall, false wall on the sides that re-radiates or whatever the heat out instead of just a box.
Yep.
The big thing with a wood stove is to get the right size and match it to your house. If you get too big of one, you're going to be, you're going to be damping it down all the time because it's going to overfire your house. If you get too small of a one, you know, you're going to be chocking it full of wood all the time. So you got to get the right one for your house. I have a medium size wood stove that, is for about 1,200 square feet. It works great.
I don't know what I have. Yeah. It's medium size, but I don't know what it's rated for. I've never looked it up. Like I said, it came with the house. I assume whoever put it in did their homework.
Yeah. Some wood stoves, when you damp them down, they have the air on one side separately and then the flue. Mine does both at once. So when you put the rod in, it does the air and the flue simultaneously. I totally recommend it because it's simpler.
Uh-huh.
So I have a front-loading stove. Some are top-loading, like Vermont Castings. I prefer the front-loading because they're simpler. One gasket, one door, and you just rake the coals to the front. Take ash out, rake the coals to the front. You're back in business. Top-loading are more convenient because you never have to rake anything. You just put wood in there. So
do you have do you not have an ash catch
at the bottom? It does, but I don't need it. I never use it. Okay. I shouldn't have gotten it. It's useless.
Okay.
Because I don't need it. I just rake out the... take ash out every time I open the door a little bit.
I feel like most wood stoves, the grates are so big that everything just is always falling through and catching into the ashtray in the bottom.
I don't have grates.
Uh-huh.
It's just the bottom of brick.
Yep.
There's brick all around it, which probably makes it more efficient because it re-radiates the heat into itself.
Right, right.
But they have these baffles on the top of these stoves, and when you take the oxygen away, it creates sort of like pyrolysis where it burns the unburned gases. And you'll get, if you get it just right and you did everything perfect, you should have a wave, a blanket of fire on top of your fire.
The mesmerizing flame look. That's not, what not you the did. Camp, not the campfire flame.
Right. You did it just right.
Yep.
You win.
I don't have
you that. Win the firewood game.
I do not have that. <That's>, but I think it's my stove.
So everyone's house is different, okay? What's counterintuitive is that, yes, heat rises, but you lose a lot of your heat if you're trying to heat the upstairs from the downstairs, meaning from the basement. You could probably more easily heat your house from the first floor to the second floor, but from the basement to the first floor, you're losing a lot of heat and transfer. It's better to maybe just heat on those really cold nights, the basement. But I understand why people wouldn't want to do that because now you have to have either backup oil or a separate stove. I have a second stove in the basement, but my stove downstairs is so much less efficient because it has more exterior flue, right? That's more exposed to the elements, so it's drawing hot to cold through that flue, and it'll eat up wood much faster. The stove upstairs, the flue stays inside the house longer, the gases stay warm, there's less exchange to the outside,
yep,
and I burn so much less wood.
Wow, and they're the same stoves, right?
Same exact stove. Hmm. Exact same stove.
Interesting.
Yeah, so flue matters, even with the same stove. So, but that's all the time we got, man.
Flew
you got
by.
Anything else? Yeah, I know. We're out of time. So, basically, don't damp down your unit until you have your fire. Your firewood is completely consumed with fire. Then damp it down. A lot of people damp down too early. Now you're getting smoke. Smoke indicates that you're losing heat. Shouldn't really have any smoke. So, all right, that's all the time we have on From the Forest. Thank you for listening, and, well, there's another Wednesday in December, so we'll see you in 2020 still.
Merry Christmas.
All right, take care.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear.